This is the January 19 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jerry Golke of the Golke Group. That's golkegroup.com. He's normally in Rockford, Illinois, but he's traveling today. We'll find out where to in just a moment. Kurt Kimmel is here as well from agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. And Greg Johnson at TGM, totalgrainmarketing.com, joins us from Champaign, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. One other item, the Farm Doc team, the agricultural economists from the University of Illinois, are back in-house on campus after being on the road for a week with the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. If you missed that, don't worry. You can always catch up on it with IFAS Online for six Thursdays in a row. That began this week with the Grain Outlook, which is already posted in the archives at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. We will be putting together one-hour summaries of each of the presentations made on the road at 11 a.m. You can join us. Just sign up for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now, let's turn our attention to the markets at hand. Let's get some things that we should talk about today. We'll start with you, Greg Johnson. What's on your list?
Well, I think since we're in the middle of the growing season down in South America, I think there's two questions that we want to address. Number one is the Argentine bean crop, which, according to the private guys, seemed to be lower than what USDA came out with. And then number two, the corn crop in Brazil, which hasn't even been planted yet, the Serafina crop, the second crop, the one that gets planted after the beans get harvested. You know, what are our expectations for that? Can we assume a normal crop? I guess that's what we have to assume, but I think those two things are probably front and center right now, other than the USDA report.
Kirk Kimmel of AgMarket.net on your list.
Yeah, as soon as we get past the South American production numbers, weather, and so forth, we'll quickly start to focus on the U.S. So probably some outlook for the 23. A lot of winter meetings taking place here and a lot of projections on how many acres, what type of yield, and what ifs to look at here as we move forward, Todd.
And finally, Jerry Golke of the Golke Group, your list.
Well, I've been watching South America as well as everybody else, but what I look for is at some point in time that we establish not what the Argentine crop is per se, is that what it is not. And if it's not below 40 or that 38 level, then at least we established some level where we got an 80% chance of knowing perhaps what the total supplies are there. And the people I talk to in Brazil and in Europe are, and the ABCs of the world are saying they think that crop in Brazil could be 155 or 157. And if you go back, in the last few years, and when we've had a normal year, even in a dry year, we've always come out of there with soybeans out of Brazil that was more than we thought. Even last year, we thought, we're going to run out of beans out of Brazil by August, and then we'll have the market all to ourselves. And here they are. They were exporting beans into December. So we have a tendency to underestimate that crop. And if that's the case, then we've offset a big portion of the deficit out of Argentina. While admittedly, the USDA has said, too, that China is probably going to import maybe 4 or 5 million metric tons less than the 102 million tons from all sources. So I'm not nearly as bullish long-term as what some of the marketplace are.
By the way, where are we talking to you from today?
Well, in my house in La Quinta, California, actually. So I spend some of the winters out here more and more every year. And this year I got confined because I got every disease that you can think of after taking vitamins and getting shots, for 3 years and buying a motor home to drive home in so I wouldn't have to sleep in a hotel. And here I got it and ended up with pneumonia. So I'm getting better. 4 weeks ago, I didn't have a voice. So it's a son of a gun. But and we haven't seen weather. Maybe for about 4 or 5 days, we saw weather over 75 degrees, but since the end of the year and since really Christmas, we haven't seen weather above 70 degrees, and that's highly unusual. So you get a feeling in watching the water finally rain down on the drought spot here that the weather patterns have changed, and that La Nina thing that's going to be weakening is probably true, which then helps us get a, probably a better chance or an average guess as to a normal crop in the U.S. You know, no big problems per se, which is what Drew Lerner has been saying for, you know, 4 weeks now.
Indeed. And we talked to Drew on our daily programming, the Closing Market Report, each Wednesday, if folks want to tune in on that one. Greg Johnson, how do you see the Argentine crop at this point? It's been under serious stress for a long time.
Yeah, I think it continues to go lower. I think USDA's number is probably 3 to 4 million metric tons too high. I think that will come down eventually. But as Jerry mentioned earlier, Brazil's off to a good start. They grow three times as many beans as Argentina. So if you take a bushel more off of Argentina's crop or two bushels, can Brazil's crop be up by a half a bushel an acre or a bushel to offset that? Possibly. But the bottom line is we're still looking at a very, very tight supply. You know, that's why we have $15 beans. And you know, I think the Argentine crop just continues to add concern because we really won't know the extent of the Brazil crop here for another month, month and a half. So there's some uncertainty in the marketplace. And when there's uncertainty, there's, you know, opportunities on the upside and the downside. And I think we'll, you know, see some opportunities on the upside here yet.
Kurt Kimmel, a couple of things as you're thinking about these projections you were discussing that we should take up. First, I suppose that the AgMarket.net team probably is putting together projections for your Nashville event, or you've already released them, one of the two.
Yeah, we'll go into more detail that first weekend in February for those still interested in maybe attending this in Nashville. Give us a call here. We can still get you in there. They actually set up a bigger room, so more than welcome to come and visit. On acreage, bean acres, you can see that increase anywhere from 0.5 to 1 million acres. What type of yield to put on that? That's going to be the moving target for beans there, as you can range it anywhere from 48 bushels up to 54 bushels. And at the lower end, you have a real tight situation. At the upper end, you'll have excess inventory. Corn acres, closer to 90.5 million. And once again, you can put a yield on anywhere from 173 to about 182. So it's going to be a moving target. The key, though, is when you go through the supply-demand balance sheet, one thing to look at, everybody kind of adjusts the usage. And when you have higher yields, higher production, your usage should go up. And when you have lower yields and supply, the usage should go down. So when you look at what ifs, if they got a consistent number clear across, that might, you might want to keep in mind, you just can't have the usage the same according to what type of production you have. So the most reliable tables to look at is one that adjusts the usage according to the yield.
We'll get to some of the numbers that have been released. Of course, the FarmDoc team has a set of numbers. Farm Futures released their numbers on Thursday afternoon in their Coralville, Iowa conference. We'll talk about those in just a bit as well. I do want to turn my attention back to Jerry Gulke. Because, Jerry, I made note in some paperwork that you sent me, you also have an event, although it's got a nice destination if you want to go to Palm Springs. Can you tell me about that one, too?
Yeah, Drew Lerner will be speaking, and, of course, you're familiar with Roger Wallace, in my mind, probably the best cattle analyst out there, or one of the best. And then we have Drury from... McBain, who's on the economic side of it, who's does manage money and has worked for McBain for decades, I guess a couple decades, very good with the economy and has been right on top of it right along. Doesn't see, last time we talked to him, doesn't see a recession coming. Doesn't mean that the stock market won't take another hit, but he doesn't see a serious recession. And then we're going to talk about it to a fertilizer guy and then some other, one other person that I can't remember right now, but we have it for about 3 days, a half a day each day, and then we usually have a mixer at our house out there, and everybody get together, and we usually get, you know, maybe 50 clients and 100 people for a banquet. So it's a real good time, and a lot of people are interested finally. It's been very difficult for me, at least, and maybe I'm the only one, but I've talked to a few other analysts, and you know, the brokerage business is down. Farmers aren't interested in doing anything. I got money, and I don't need another $10,000 or $20,000 in income from hedging. And it's okay, and it'll come back, and we'll get another chance at selling these prices again. And I'm afraid that with this market turns, and weather would cooperate, that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be not real happy with fall prices. But that's a ways down the road yet, and a lot depends, of course, on South America and China. But we're looking forward to that conference. I've done a lot of them. I'm feeling like one of these has got to be my last one, and I want to quit voluntarily, not because somebody laid me flat, you know.
I hear that. That conference, by the way, is February the 15th to the 17th, and the All-Day Ag Outlook, which most of you will be familiar with at the Beef House, takes place on the 7th day of March. It's usually the last one of the year, kind of a conference. Actually, I like the way we have ours set up, which is the Farm Assets Conference kind of kicks things off in late November, and then we wrap things up in March with the Farm Doc team and the brokers from willag.org. You can find all that information online at willag.org. Now, speaking of the Farm Doc team, they have updated their supply and demand tables, and here's what the numbers look like for the 2023 growing season. They have a 180 bushel to the acre yield. USDA in their baseline from October has it at 181.5. So that's what USDA is calling trend. For a very long time, the University of Illinois folks have been a bushel to a bushel and a half below that trend line. So each and every year, it's kind of that way. They put feed usage at 5.6 billion bushels, and they put the ethanol at 5.325, which is up from the 5275 for this year. Ending stocks then are just above 2 billion bushels for the 2023 growing season, and a $5.20 season's average cash price. They renegotiated these numbers after the USDA figures were released last week on the road with the Illinois Farm Economic Summit's Kurt Kimmel. We were at $5.10. Given all of those numbers, even today on Thursday during the Illinois Farm Economic Summit online, both Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen said, you know, that 520 is pretty high still, we think, given the stocks-to-use ratio that we're showing at 14.1%. What'd you make of the numbers?
Wow, 520 being high, that's an eye-waking experience. But yeah, definitely there's some downside exposure here if we have the acres and if we have the yield. One thing on acres, there's not a whole lot of acres to go around for the most part. From standpoint, we saw a bigger wheat number. You're not going to steal from hay because hay's record high prices. And CRP, in fact, there's ideas we can see CRP expand here in the future. So it'll be interesting to see what type of acreage number we have. But the main thing is the yield. That yield's going to move that bottom line the most. But if everything clicks here with these numbers, yes, we're vulnerable to have a 2 billion bushel carryout. And that doesn't equate well for $6 corn. With corn, new crop corn, $6 here. What we've been incorporating is some price floors in here to take the edge off if this thing rolls down and doesn't look back, because the risk is to the downside right now, not to the upside as a producer with these higher input costs.
Anything to add to this as it relates to the numbers that the Farm Doc team has put out, Greg?
Well, they are assuming that we're going to increase acres. You know, there's a lot of prevented plant acres last year in corn. If those acres all go to corn, that number probably is reachable. But if you look at some of the other numbers, or if we have any kind of problems at all in the spring or high input cost or whatever the case is, we may not reach those numbers. So I kind of look at it as a best case scenario, worst case scenario, and most likely scenario. And 92.5 seems to be 92.5, 93 seems best case scenario. Something in the high 80s seemed to be the worst case scenario for corn acres. So you figure something in between, and then you use kind of an average yield, and maybe you can get production at 15 billion bushels. And if so, you know, usage is 14.5 if you take a 3-year average. So we could add a half a billion bushels to the carryout. The carryout this year is 1.2. So if everything goes right, and that's a big if, we could have a carryout of 1.7. And as Kurt said, that would result in downward pressure on the markets. But I guess my point is, we won't know that for a while. So how quickly will the market try to, you know, jump the numbers, and will they assume those kind of numbers or not? I guess that's what we'll have to wait and see.
And just to reiterate, the FarmDoc team, the Ag Economists, do have their corn acreage for 2023, the coming growing season, at 92.5 million acres. So 2 out of 3 at 1.7 billion for the carryout. Where do you think the carryout for the 23-24 crop year will end up?
I have a problem with feed and residuals, both the baseline and the FarmDoc forecast. It seems high to me. We've been talking about it, and we've even thought it. At best, it stays level. You're going to have a lot less cattle on feed because of the cow liquidation. You can make some of that up with chickens, perhaps, but they don't eat as much corn as cattle do. But it seems to me that at best case, you hold it steady from this year. But maybe you can rise it. But I can't see 325 million bushels more. And ethanol probably is due for certainly maybe stabilizing. We follow miles driven, and it's behind a couple months, but it stabilized out, went flat basically for the last 3 months. If that turns down a little, why then you've got a problem with the gas consumption, and that's already questionable. So I think had they not raised those numbers out there, I think the ending stocks would have been higher. Our ending stocks, our first shot at it was about 2 billion. We could see that maybe pretty reasonably. But I don't have the acres, as 4 million acres more is quite a stretch. I think you probably drop that by 1.5 million, and you add it to soybeans from what we hear now. And but I guess to carry out how you get there, I still think it's between 1.75 and 2 billion, and that's not $6.50 corn. So that's where we're at. I think we have a problem with demand globally that we haven't. We're assuming China's going to come back with a vengeance, but I think it takes time for them to get back in the swing of things. So I question their demand side. Yield wise, like other folks said, it's a shot, and you got to start somewhere. But I think you start with less acres and less demand, and go from there.
So you're at what, 91 million acres for the coming crop or thereabouts then?
Yeah.
And what do you have for exports?
Probably right around 2 billion. I can't argue with FarmDoc at 2.1. I think they're more realistic than the USDA is.
All right. So what does that mean in your opinion, Jerry? And we'll go around the horn with this as to where farmers should be now as it's related to new crop corn sales.
Well, we're significant. We've sold 20-30% of new crop in the cash market. And we like to do that because a lot of people don't like the margin calls. And at $6, it works pretty well. When it was above $6, a little bit and below, if we can get $5.90 out of the field, that'll work for the first 20%. And I look at that as being the 20% that probably won't be insured. If you use an 80% insurance, then you're uninsured at that portion, but at least it covers that. And we have some hedges on. Anytime it got to $6, we'd add a little bit. It's kind of like they say, kissing your girlfriend through the screen door. You don't know if you're getting the job done or not, but selling 2 or 3 or 5% every time the market hit $6 seems to be working. And what's concerned me is that the quick way that our price discovery system found a value for both corn and beans after that Wisely report came out, and Wisely report was pretty bullish. On the surface, and bam, we sold off of it. And the market has been very content with saying, I don't think I have to pay Jerry and his friends anything more than $6 futures. We'll have enough corn if that's all we have to pay for it now. So we're pretty leery about the whole complex growing too much of everything. We have higher ending stocks for this year going in the next year on beans, maybe more like 240. And then I don't see... I see the distinct possibility of it being closer to 400 next year, when we get down the road a year from the end of August this year. So that's a long way out, but I'm afraid we have a global, if you look at the global GDP, there used to be a way of we could plug in, and we used to have a spreadsheet that did that. You could plug in calories eaten per GDP increase or decrease, and That was back in the day when Willard Sparks was still alive. And we'd look at that. When you've got 80% or probably of the global country world in recession, according to some people out there, I don't see how that you can increase the use of everything and still maintain that economic situation out there. So that has some headwinds, I think.
Well, right now, Dee's corn, as Jerry said, has flirted with $6. It gets a little over six, and then it runs into some resistance. And I guess I'm trying to hold out for $6.20, just because that would equate to more like a $6 cash price for farmers in our area. And I'm still going to try to be patient. It feels like February is a crop insurance month where we set that spring guarantee price, and tends to have a little bit of a rally between now and then. So if we can get to 620, anywhere in that 610 to 620 range, I guess I would be a seller of corn for bushels that you don't want to store. If we haven't gotten there, I wouldn't certainly talk anybody out of it, because I understand with it, if everything goes right, we could be at $5 or lower this fall. So I don't want to pass up $6. And I, without a drought, it doesn't feel like 6.25 needs to go a whole lot higher than that, unless something goes wrong that we don't know about today. So I think the range is $5 to 6.25, and we're at $6 today. So we're a lot closer to the top than the bottom. I'm just trying to squeeze a little bit more out of it here.
And Kirk Kimmel, are you still continuing to push farmers to try to make those new crop corn sales as well?
Yeah, from an agmarket.net perspective, we're 50% priced or hedged with a flexible marketing program. Basically, we've got a $6 floor and a $7 cap here to give guys some comfort, at least getting in, like was mentioned there, on the crop insurance, see what the discovery price we have in February. But for individuals, we've moved to doing some hedges on 20-25%. Just the fact that new crop basis is still relatively wide at this point. And for those just strictly cash markers, we've started doing that to help at least cover some input costs and get started on this 23 production.
Let's go through some of the fundamentals. We've talked about them broadly as they're related to some of the projections that have been made, but I'd like to talk about fundamentals for the day. And I'll start with you, Greg. On ethanol, USDA did not change that number in last week's old crop balance sheet. Should they have, and does it need to come down?
I understand why they didn't change it just yet. I guess they think that ethanol prices follow crude oil prices, and crude oil seems to be in this $70 to $90 range. We're kind of right at $80 a barrel today, so we're right in the middle. If oil would go up, then ethanol prices could go up, the margins would return, and then those ethanol numbers could stay there. But if it's the way it is right now, ethanol margins are flat to negative, and that doesn't bode well for increased ethanol production. So I at this point, if oil stays at $80 a barrel or lower, I guess I would see the ethanol number eventually being reduced.
Jerry Gulke, you mentioned four-legged creatures and not as many of them around. What do you think those numbers look like, and how should the feed and residual figures be thought about for old crop?
Well, we kind of felt that we could actually reduce this year's number a little bit, because we haven't been affected a lot by those lower numbers further out. And we've got cattle everybody knows for the last 9 months, 10 months now, that we're going to have a shortage of meat because of killing the cows. And we've been waiting and waiting for that. And we got to a point, and the market doesn't seem to want to get to $200 a hundredweight on live cattle in order to pay for the feeder cattle and for the corn. And I know we raise cattle in North Dakota, and the calves are going to market. There's no way that we're going to feed, $6 corn to an animal and try to get another 50 cents a bushel or whatever. We might break even. There's not that much fun in feeding them in the wintertime. So they'll go to town, and the cows will stay pretty. We got them culled out now, but there's not a lot of incentive out there, I don't think, for the feeder to buy feeders and do that. For the cow calf guy, he's probably going to get a good price for feeders because of the shortage. But I think you lower that down to hopefully stay stable. They've whacked it pretty good, and from a year ago. But the world has changed out there quite a bit, and I think it's going to be difficult to do. The biggest shock will probably come next fall when we see the numbers out there, and that's when they can have a chance once they know the, you know, the if the crop happens to get not be 180 bushels an acre, and we come into 177 and they got less to use, like someone said earlier, then you adjust the demand side because you've got less bushels to, and then they can justify doing that. But I think it's optimistic to see both ethanol and feed usage that high. And you just can't recreate the four-letter critters overnight unless it's in hogs, and you've seen what happened to hogs. There's not an incentive out there to expand by concrete and so forth. So.
Kurt Kimmel, if you could take up exports for the old crop, and I think at that same time, I know you wanted to talk about Safrinha or second crop corn in Brazil. That plays in the old crop mix, as it will be in the marketplace prior to a new crop coming on from the United States. How do you put all those numbers together, and how does the export picture look for the U.S. at this point? I suppose if you look at the graphics, really not very good.
No, we're off to a slow start here on U.S. exports for basically this first quarter. A lot of enthusiasm, of course, is on the soybean side of the equation. We're at or above USDA projections at this point in time. You got to remember the export market, we're just now moving into the second quarter. Traditionally, corn exports start to pick up here as we move into spring. So it's going to be very important for that number to giddy up for the most part. So that export market is vulnerable, but it's probably too early to start downgrading it a whole lot until we actually see who steps forward here. You know, as far as the South America, the importance is this El Nino or weather pattern change in through here. That's going to be a critical thing to watch as Brazil has actually been a little on the wet side in through here. So we'll go from the soybean concern to the corn concern here fairly quickly.
Let's wrap up our conversation, get a final word from each of you now. Terry Golke of the Golke Group, I'll start with you today. Your final word for producers and landowners.
Well, I've been taking a look at the soybean prices, where they've been at. And I, every time they got above $14 out of the field in the or futures in new crop beans, I sold beans. I'd be more apt to we're probably 30% at least covered and 20-some% in the cash and some more in the futures. I'll grow $14.50 beans, I think, before I'll want to grow sub $5 corn. I don't have the basis. We're about 40 under in northern Illinois, delivered to the elevator, so there's another dime or 12 cents. So we're closer to 50 under, and that's down to 550 level already. And I'll keep all the corn acres I planted last year to beans, and we had more corn last year, so that was more favorable to me. And I thought, my goodness, at some point in time, someone's going to think if they need the corn, we need to rob some of those bean acres on paper, at least in price, back to corn. And you've seen the market the last few days. In fact, that really since the first of the year, there's just not that concern. And now all of a sudden we've lost a lot in the soybean market as well. It acts to me like the market is telling me, Jerry, do what you want. At the end of the year, we're probably going to have more than enough anyway. And it's like a lack of concern for what I do, in spite of the high price in fertilizer, which most of us bought 80% of that. And so we're locked in there. So I just have, with the weather changing, what I see is more favorable to maybe as good a crop as we've had and maybe trend line yield, I lean more to soybeans unless they decide to raise that price of corn, which doesn't seem to be in the cards.
Kirk Kimmel, your final word for the day?
One thing, going back in history somewhat, we got a lot of projections in front of us. There was a major firm out of the southern half of the U.S. that projected 500 million bushel bean carryout for about 2 or 3 years in a row. And the bottom line is carryout came in about 200 million bushels. So there's a lot of moving parts here to keep in mind, but you got to plan and defend. And secondly, we were out in Las Vegas here this past weekend with the ADMIS national meeting. And one of the key speakers we had there was David Hightower. He's going to be at our Nashville meeting. And you might want to stop and listen to him, because David has moved to unfiltered, unleashed, and it's preaching high volatility and some pretty good ideas. So you might want to stop at Nashville if you can.
And Greg Johnson from TGM, your final word for the day.
Ending stocks on both corn and bean are historically tight, 1.2 billion on corn and 210 million bushels on beans. And if everything goes right, those carryouts will be bigger by next fall. But we've got a lot of time between now and then. So I guess in the short run, I'm a little bit friendly. But in the long run, I think we want to sell those rallies because we probably will be lower by the time fall rolls around.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week. They included Jerry Golke of the Golke Group, Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net, and Greg Johnson of TGM, Total Grain Marketing. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.